Good evening. It is 5.05 p.m. and time for another almost full hour of independent news. Our headlines will cover local news from Metro Vancouver, provincial and federal news from across Canada, as well as news from around the world. Today we have a news report from our correspondent Nagin Rizian. We will also be bringing you our regular segments. In Simply Science, Sarah Chow will be talking about daredevil Felix Baumgartner's stratospheric skydive. We'll also be having a Hardball with Iqbal, our regular editorial segment, as well as talking to UBC student Emma DeJolly about her participation in the Welfare Challenge.
All this plus your weekday weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club right here on News 101, your source for independent news. And now for your UBC campus and local headlines.
Indecision on how to fund TransLink is perpetuating debate between the Metro Vancouver Mayor's Council and the BC Transportation Minister, Mary Pollock. On Thursday, October 18th, the mayors of Metro Vancouver voted against a $30 million property tax increase that would help fund upcoming TransLink projects such as rapid bus lines for the Portman Bridge, upgrades to the SkyTrain, and a B-Line Express bus service along King George Boulevard. Pollock says that the mayors are equipped with the tools necessary for creating a new funding proposal, while the mayors insist that they lack the proper tools. Instead, the mayors are issuing an ultimatum for Pollock, saying that she has until February to come up with a new funding model. There is still some hope for a consensus, since Gregor Robertson is among the many mayors who support road pricing, which would mean tolls for drivers crossing different areas of Metro Vancouver. However, Pollock says, quote, "If they want the responsibility for running it, then they need to make those decisions. Tell me, as the minister, the things that you've investigated, the things that you've planned, how you're going to do them. Show me there is some public support, and we are able to do that," end quote.
QP116 workers continue to escalate their job action, with mail workers, garbage collectors, and custodians all off the job, and three buildings picketed on Thursday. Pickets were set up at the Student Union Building, the Powerhouse, and the Campus and Community Planning Building. The union continues to withhold campus mail and garbage collection, and custodians have also stopped working as of Thursday. Director of UBC Public Affairs, Lucy McNeil, has said that the pickets of the Powerhouse did not have a large effect, since the union is required to keep a minimum number of workers on the job. McNeil said, quote, "To my knowledge, there's been no power issues. This is an essential service. This is basically core health and safety for the university." Mail has been out since yesterday, but CUPE 116 President Colleen Garb has said, quote, "It could be affecting students, but it's minimal compared to what we could be doing. We have to put pressure on the employer. I understand that it might be an inconvenience to get your mail for a day or two, but it's terribly devastating for half our membership to lose their jobs," end quote. Mail service is only expected to be out for a few days. However, garbage collectors and possibly the custodians who clean inside buildings will be off the job until a contract is reached between QP116 and UBC. QP116 and UBC have bargaining sessions scheduled for Friday and Saturday. The meetings will be mediated by Vince Reddy, a big name in labor negotiations.
Students using the facilities in Osborne have raised concerns that a man has been secretly recording nudity in the Osborne Center gym change room at UBC. The RCMP received an application for a search warrant alleging that a suspect has been hiding in change rooms at UBC so that he could film women changing and using the washroom. One account describes a student noticing someone watching her change in the Osborne Center gym on September 28th. She asked a friend to accompany her into the change room on October 2nd. The application for the warrant read, quote, "When they opened one shower stall, they saw him inside, not quite huddled, but crouching. They began to scream," end quote. The man escaped from the building and was apprehended by the RCMP in the bushes outside the gym. According to the application, the RCMP alleges that there were videos on his phone filmed underneath a stall that showed nudity. Jay Winship Forrester has been charged on two counts of secretly observing / recording nudity in a private place. The suspect's next court appearance is November 1st.
Arts Undergraduate Society President Harsiv Ocean, along with AUS VP Admin David Paska, has started to move forward on his promise. Paska said, quote, "We got the ball rolling by speaking to AMS designer Michael Kingsmill, who has mentored us on the project ever since the beginning of midsummer, and we've made enormous progress so far, end quote. Oshan said that he has already presented a design of the building to the Dean of Arts. The concept design currently entails a freestanding building with space for club storage, food services, a merchandise area, studying, and guest lectures, and the space could go on the west side of Buchanan A. There have been recent difficulties that the Engineering Undergraduate Society has had over control of their new student space. Oshan said, quote, "Currently, we have total control of mass, and we would like to have that. But if engineering falls under that contract, it's going to be very hard for us to stand up to the university and say, no, we want the contract to be like this." As well, currently the cost of the building is estimated at $5.4 million, of which the AUS would have to raise $2.5 million. Oshan has said that it would be about $42 to $46 a year per art student for 5 years. The referendum on the Student Space Fund will be held from February 4th to 15th.
And those are your UBC campus and local headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick break, but please do stay tuned for your provincial and national headlines.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Sunday, October 21st, Socialacious Entertainment and CITR bring you a night of eclectic music at the Media Club, featuring indie rock group Valley Girl, acoustic songwriter Harley Spade, alternative hip-hop acts ACO plus SC, award-winning fiddle punk rocker Alex Randall, and funk soul buster David Morin. Tickets available at the door for $10 or through artists. Come down to the Media Club and kick back 10 days before Halloween with some great local independent music. Show starts at 9 p.m.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to us on the FM dial at 101.9 or online at citr.ca, broadcasting to you live from University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thanks for being with us. We now talk to UBC student Emma DeJolly about her involvement in the Welfare Challenge. Hi, Emma.
Hi.
So can you tell us about what the Welfare Challenge is to start out with?
Yeah. So basically, the challenge is based on the current welfare rate in BC. And essentially, the BC government provides $610 a month in welfare to a single person. And after looking at the cost of living in, say, Vancouver, any other area of the province, and looking for work, paying for your phone bills, paying for any basic necessities, all that a person tends to have left over to pay for food on average is $26, which is not a very reasonable amount for providing yourself with a nutritious diet. Mm-hmm. So the idea of the Welfare Food Challenge is that participants are going to try living off of that $26 cap, price cap for a week.
Okay, so it's $26 per week that people have.
The point is to experience what it's like to live with such a minimal level of like sustenance and see how it is. So it's a really good experiential learning.
And so are we midway through that week right now then?
Yeah.
And how has that been going for you?
So it's going till next Tuesday.
Okay. And how have you found those budget constraints, and what have you had? What have you found you've been eating a lot of?
Mostly I've been eating rice and beans and oatmeal in the morning and frozen spinach. And it's been a lot harder than I expected, actually. I thought that I would probably be eating around the same amount of food that I eat on a day-to-day basis, but just maybe not as much choice. But I've realized that I'm probably eating about half of what I would normally be eating on a regular day, and it's really noticeable. It's a lot harder than I thought,
And I imagine this is probably, like, affecting you in other ways as well. I mean, obviously, like, you don't eat enough or you don't eat well, and you probably, like, more tired, or affects schoolwork as well. And I'm sure that's also part of the challenges. It's not just about the food at the end of the day, but it's about, like, the whole, I guess, lifestyle impacts, right?
Yeah, it creates, like, this, like, sort of emotional and psychological burden that you wouldn't expect when you start having, I don't know, this barrier, I guess, to feeding yourself, which is such an essential part of our day-to-day lives. And I mean, for me in school, I can't buy coffee. It's not really worth it given how much money I have to spend. And I've noticed myself being a bit more tired and just kind of, you know, I have to put more thought into my meal preparation. But the crazy thing for me is that, like, I'm a student pretty much living on my own, and I'm in a pretty easy situation compared a lot of people on welfare who have, like, families to provide for and young kids, and they're going out and trying to find a job. And it's just, I mean, the fact that I'm finding it this difficult in my circumstances make it really hard for me to imagine being in a worse off position.
Yeah, for sure. And what is the purpose overall about the welfare challenge? I mean, obviously it's having a really big impact on you, but what is the significance of the project overall?
So it's actually an offshoot of a campaign called Raise the Rates, which is advocating that the BC government raises the welfare rate in BC overall, just because the economic consequences of having a welfare rate this low and having such a high poverty rate in BC are probably offsetting the so-called arguments against increasing welfare, given, like, charity, health costs, education costs. So, I mean, it's both an economically feasible and logical idea, as well as it would have good consequences. It would bring good results, I think, to poverty in BC overall. We have, like, currently the highest rate of poverty in Canada. So,
And do you know, just off the top of your head, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but to what they're advocating to raise the rate? Or, like, by what percentage or by what dollar amount?
I am actually not sure.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Maybe, well, we'll see if we can find that for during our next break.
What they said is that the cost, like, the total package of raising income and providing better child care and better low-income housing would cost about $4 billion.
Okay.
This is just, like, a statistic that I read today.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not sure exactly where it's coming from, but it is on the Raise the Rights website.
Mm-hmm.
And they are suggesting that that's about half the cost that poverty is incurring on the BC government and taxpayers right now.
Wow.
Without this package being implemented.
That's pretty significant then. Awesome. It was great talking to you, Emma, and learning a bit more about the welfare challenge and Raise the Rates, and best of luck to you as you continue on with this week.
Thanks so much. And tell anyone to check out the Welfare and Food Challenge. It has a website online and you can find a lot more information there.
Perfect.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Emma. Okay. Bye. So once again, that was UBC student Emma Jajali. She's doing the Welfare Challenge, part of the Raise the Rates campaign. And for more information, you can just go to the Raise the Rates website online. So now it's time for our story from CITR correspondent Negan Rizani about free textbooks.
The following is a story I wrote for Van City Buzz, titled British Columbia will offer free online textbooks. British Columbia will soon be the first Canadian province to offer free online open textbooks for the 40 most popular post-secondary courses. The government says up to 200,000 BC students each year will benefit from this. They add that the hundreds of dollars that students save can go toward other learning supplies, living expenses, etc. Minister of Advanced Education John Yap shares his view.
BC will be the first province in this country to offer education materials absolutely free, saving BC students literally hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars.
An open textbook is generally published under an open license and can be read online or downloaded for free. If you want a hard copy, the book will be available for printing at a fraction of traditional textbook costs. Because open textbooks are digital and open, they can be modified and adapted by instructors to fit different courses. The BC government says it will work with post-secondary institutions in applying an open textbook policy. The government hopes this will take effect as early as the 2013-2014 school year. Nagin Rezian, CITR 101.9.
Thank you to Nagin for that story. It is now time for our weekend weather forecast, prepared by our intrepid weatherman, Phil Chang, but delivered today by the ever-lovely Morgan Yee.
Hello. Looks like this weekend is going to be a little rainy. We have light on and off precipitation, which is expected to accompany us over the next few days due to a low-pressure cell holding stagnant over us. Dropped too far. Rotating counterclockwise, the cell is resisting the general west-to-east air circulation, causing our pressure graphs here in Vancouver to flatline at approximately 100 kilopascals over the next 72 hours, which is consistently below the standard sea level pressure. The silver lining, despite being kept at bay over the Pacific Ocean, a high-pressure ridge has formed to our northwest direction, partly cutting off the cell source for more fuel and moisture. So while the system could still potentially deepen, its growth is likely to be limited. Weather Canada's forecast for this weekend. Today, mainly cloudy, high of 13, with temperature falling to 7 this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy with 40% chance of showers this evening. And after midnight, then partly cloudy. Windy near the water overnight, temperature steady near 7. Saturday, you can expect a mix of sun and cloud, becoming cloudy near noon with 60% chances of showers late in the afternoon and in the evening. Windy near the water early in the morning with a high of 10. And Sunday, it's expected to be cloudy with 60% chances of showers, a low of 5, or plus 5, sorry, and a high of 9.
Thanks, Morgan, for that weather forecast. We're going to take a quick break now, but do stay with us for your provincial and national news.
Australia and Canada are both countries with a whole lot of space to create some of the wildest sounds on the planet. Join your host Matthew as he explores the musical heritage of his native Australia and features fresh sounds from Canada's independent music world. That's Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, live Fridays from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
All right. So it's time for your provincial and national headlines. First up, the University of Victoria is making budget cuts across a broad range of departments to free up funds to pay for wage increases. Last week, the university and the Professional Employees Association reached tentative agreement to provide a percent wage increase and another 2% next July. UVic has agreed to cut 1.5% from its budget in 2012 to 2013 and 4% in 2013 to 2014. a measure which is expected to save $3 million this year and $7 million in the following year. The agreement has been reached under the provincial cooperative gains policy that requires any wage increases to be funded out of the existing budget without reducing services or adding costs for taxpayers or ratepayers. In an announcement, university spokesperson Bruce Kilpatrick told reporters, quote, "The agreement was reached keeping the cooperative gains mandate fully in mind," adding that it's very good news to have the agreement settled without any major disruption. Melissa Morose, a labor relations officer with the PEA, said that while the union would have liked larger wage increases to make up for recent years where there were no raises, the tentative agreement was the best that could be reached under the circumstances.
A new proposal has come forward to rezone 955 East Hastings Street. It has been put forward by GBL Architects and Wall Financial Corporation and concerns a plot of land across the street from a BC housing development and the Ray Cam Cooperative Center. The proposal suggests developing a 12-story mixed-use building with 282 condominium units and 70 low-income housing units that will be subsidized by the government or rented at lower rates, as well as commercial and light industrial space. However, members of the Downtown Eastside Local Area Planning Committee have criticized the project. Co-chair Michael Clegg said, quote, "Our big concern is that the ratio of welfare rent housing is very, very low. It's not a formula that will address the huge need for welfare rate housing in the Downtown Eastside," end quote. The Planning Committee has expressed concern that the project is so large that it will jeopardize the other long-term strategic plan that they are currently developing. However, other organizations have expressed support. For example, the Strathcona Business Improvement Association sees the project as helping to fill the area's housing gap.
Leaders of a small First Nations village on BC's northwest coast on Friday defended their decision to dump 120 tons of iron dust into the ocean as a legal experiment to revive salmon stocks. But Canada said it was investigating a possible breach of environmental law. The village council conducted its $2.52 million experiment in August in the waters around Haida Gwaii, 130 kilometers off the coast. In a project that has drawn widespread condemnation from scientists concerned about the impacts of unsupervised studies, the village employed scientists, biologists, and technicians to pour iron sulfate into the water. A spokesman for Canadian Environment Minister Peter Kent said officials had launched an investigation into the incident. Environment Canada warned the group in May that depositing iron ore in waters was a violation of Canadian environmental laws, except in the case of legitimate research, he said. Ocean fertilization is not currently allowed under Canadian environmental laws because it is considered a form of disposal at sea.
The federal broadcast regulator gave an unequivocal thumbs down to BC Incorporated's takeover of Astral Media on Thursday, declaring in no uncertain terms that the $3.4 billion deal was not good for Canadians. The surprise announcement by the CRTC was announced after stock markets closed and marked the first major decision for newly installed Commissioner Jean-Pierre Blais, who took over late June. Not only did Blais turn down one of the biggest takeovers ever submitted to the CRTC, he left little doubt about where he stood or how he would respond should BCE return with a modified but essentially similar proposal. The CRTC said that BCE, owner of Bell Canada, the CTV television network, and numerous specialty stations, already has 33.7% of the English television viewing audience, well ahead of its nearest rival, Shaw Communications, with 21.9%. Had it succeeded in acquiring Astral Media's 25 channels and more than 80 radio stations into the BCE fold, it would have gained 42.7% of the English viewing audience. The combination would have also given it 33.1% of the French TV market. In response to these numbers, the regulator said, quote, "That convergence, integration, and scale may lead to a point at which the size of an entity on a national level becomes so large that it hinders effective and healthy competition," end quote.
Shell Canada has failed in an attempt to use the federal government's new environmental assessment rules to try to bar Greenpeace from hearings on the company's proposed Jackpine oil sands mine in northern Alberta. In a letter to the agency conducting the assessment of the plan, Shell lawyers had argued that Greenpeace and two university professors no longer had standing under new rules contained in the Harper Tories' omnibus budget bill. The letter, which added there could be others who should be denied a chance to appear before the panel, said exclusions were necessary to, quote, focus, unquote, the review. The new rules limit presenters to those who are directly affected by a project or those who have relevant information or expertise. The lawyers said that meant some people who signed up to appear at the hearings when they begin on October 29th no longer qualified. The Shell letter specifically targeted Greenpeace campaigner Keith Stewart, who had planned to present a report entitled Harper's Shell Game, Why Tar Sands Pipelines Are Not in the National Interest. It also mentions two York University professors, Anna Zalik and Isaac Osuka. Stewart said Shell's original letter is proof that the federal Tories are deliberately trying to restrict debate around resource projects. But in a letter released late Wednesday, the agency turned down Shell's request. It said panel members were capable of keeping things on track. The constitutional challenge is to be heard October 23rd.
Those are your provincial and national headlines on News 101. It is now time for our weekly science segment, Simply Science, by Sarah Chow.
This is Simply Science, bringing you your science news. I'm Sarah Chow.
I know the whole world is watching now, and I wish the world could see what I see. And sometimes you have to go up really high to understand how small you are.
That was Felix Baumgartner describing what it was like standing 39,045 meters above the Earth. And I'm assuming by now you've all heard about Felix Baumgartner. Well, if you haven't, here's the scoop. On October 14th, an Austrian skydiver / daredevil / base jumper jumped from the Earth's stratosphere and reached the speed of 1,342.8 kilometers per hour, which is faster than the speed of sound. His jump broke two other records for highest free fall and highest manned balloon flight. This record was originally set in 1960 by Joseph W. Kittner, a former command pilot. He also helped direct Baumgartner on his record-breaking dive back to Earth. So, what did it feel like to break the sound barrier?
It's hard to describe because I didn't feel it. You know, when you're in that pressure suit, you don't feel anything.
Yeah, pretty anticlimactic. But the science that went into his death-defying feat was not. To get Baumgartner up 40,000 meters above Earth required a helium balloon made out of strips of high-performance polyethylene plastic. If you laid out all these strips side by side, it would be enough to cover 40 football fields. Attached to the balloon is a capsule. This capsule is made to withstand temperatures of nearly minus 57 degrees Celsius, which is the temperature of the stratosphere. But what happens when he jumps out? Well, he wore a pressure suit to protect him. It was insulated to hold up against temperatures between 38 to minus 67 degrees Celsius. Just think, the coldest temperature recorded here in Vancouver, British Columbia, is a mere minus 17.8 degrees Celsius, which is nothing compared to what Baumgartner's suit had to endure. Oxygen is another problem. In the stratosphere, the air is very thin, so the suit is pressurized to deliver oxygen, much like an airplane cabin. Same concept. Now, if he had no suit and just jumped out, the water in his body would turn into gas, causing his body to expand and eventually blow up. Not a good way to go. So, who designed the suit? A team from David Clark, a company based in Massachusetts. One of the team members is actually a Canadian. Shane Jacobs was working at the University of Calgary Sports Performance Lab when he was asked to take part in this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Baumgartner was also equipped with a main parachute and a reserve for his landing, as well as a drogue stabilization chute and a G-force meter. Because the air he's jumping into is incredibly thin, there's very little drag and resistance, which is a good thing for him to break the sound barrier. But without friction, he falls very fast, and things can get out of control pretty quickly. When deployed, the drogue chute will help to stabilize him, and he almost had to use it, especially when he started to spin right after jumping out of the capsule.
No, there was a period of time where I really thought I'm in trouble because I have a manual push button where I can release a drogue chute, which pulls me out of the flat spin. But at the same time, I knew if I push that button, this thing is all over. We're not going to fly supersonic. And it's hard. When you fall down at that speed, you have to make that decision. You know, somehow you have to make that call. Do I push that button and stay alive, or do I fight all my way down and break the speed of sound? And after a couple of seconds, I had that feeling, I get it under control, and I did. And that's the reason why we broke the speed of sound today.
It was a good thing he went to see a sports psychologist before his jump. A G-force meter was also attached to the drogue chute to monitor the amount of G-forces on his body. So if Baumgartner experienced 3.5 Gs for a continuous 6 seconds, it would deploy. 3.5 Gs basically feels like you're 3.5 times heavier than you actually are. For example, if you weighed 150 pounds, you would feel like you weighed 525 pounds. With that amount of force on your body, it can make anyone pass out. So how does Baumgartner's jump help mankind? It has given NASA a better idea on how to improve on self-contained space escape systems to avoid lives lost in space and give them a fighting chance. So, what's next for Baumgartner?
It's way more difficult than everything that I've done so far, and I think I'm done.
Over the coming weeks, I'll be covering the Nobel Prize winners this year, so make sure you tune in. Same bat time, same bat channel. Well, that's it for this week for Simply Science for CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm Sarah Chow.
Thank you to contributor Sarah Chow for that segment. You can also listen to all of our past interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. It's now time for your international headlines brought to you by Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!
To Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're on the road in Sacramento, California. Dozens of people were killed Thursday when Syrian war planes bombed the rebel-held town of Ma'arat al-Numan. Rescue workers interviewed at the scene reported a toll of at least 44 people, including 29 children, dead. The bombs apparently destroyed two residential buildings and a mosque where many of the victims had sought shelter. With Syria's violence continuing to flare, the UN's top human rights official, Navi Pillay, warned the current bloodshed could descend to the levels of Bosnia's sectarian war.
The memories of what happened in Bosnia and Herzegovina should be sufficiently fresh to warn us all of the danger of allowing Syria to descend into all-out sectarian conflict. Thousands and thousands of men, women, and children have already been killed, injured, tortured, displaced. It should not take something as drastic as Srebrenica to shake the world into taking serious action to stop this kind of conflict. By remaining divided, the international community is enabling continuation of the suffering and helping create the circumstances for a wider regional conflict.
The CIA is reportedly urging the White House to back a major expansion of armed drones used for attacks overseas. The Washington Post reports the CIA has asked for permission to expand its fleet by as many as 10 drones on top of the roughly 35 in its possession. The move would continue the agency's shift from intelligence activities to operating as a full-on paramilitary wing of the U.S. government. If approved, the proposal would expand the CIA's capability to wage drone attacks in Pakistan, Pakistan and Yemen, while also allowing it to shift focus to North Africa and other areas. Despite concerns of the CIA's involvement in military operations, the Pentagon reportedly has yet to raise any formal objections. President Obama hit the campaign trail in the Northeast Thursday with a continued effort to drum up support among women voters. Speaking in New Hampshire, Obama touted his record on fair pay in the workplace and access to abortion services.
You know where I stand. Yeah, look, the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, this was the first bill I signed into law. And I know you want the same thing for your daughters or sisters or moms or grandmas as I do. And this is not, as I said in the debate, this is not just a women's issue. This is a family issue. This is an economic issue. I also believe women should make their own health care decisions.
President Obama and Romney were questioned about the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act in their debate Tuesday night. On Thursday, the Romney campaign attempted to walk back a statement from top Romney advisor Ed Gillespie that Romney had opposed the bill in 2009. Elsewhere on the campaign trail, former President Bill Clinton rallied Democrats in Ohio, playing the role of warm-up act to the famed musician Bruce Springsteen.
I'd had, I don't know, 20-something jobs before I got elected president. But this is the first time in my life I ever got to be the warm-up act for Bruce Springsteen.
And I believe we are in the midst of those long days right now. And I'm here because I believe President Obama feels those days in his bones for all 100% of us.
A New York federal appeals court has become the sixth nationwide to strike down the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, which bars federal recognition of same-sex couples. On Thursday, the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said DOMA, as it's known, violates the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. The case was brought by prominent lesbian activist Edith Windsor of New York, who was forced to pay more than $350,000 in estate taxes because her marriage wasn't recognized under federal law. Five other federal appeals courts have previously deemed the law unconstitutional. Despite also opposing the law, the Obama administration's continued enforcing it pending a final ruling that it's requested from the Supreme Court. Texas is threatening to shut down a state health program for low-income women if the group Planned Parenthood continues to be involved. The Texas program offers cancer and health screenings as well as birth control services to some 130,000 low-income women, about 40% of whom are served through Planned Parenthood. But Texas has sought to ban Planned Parenthood from participating because they also provide abortions. A federal appeals court's currently reviewing Planned Parenthood's challenge to the ban. On Thursday, Texas Health and Human Services Executive Commissioner Dr. Kyle Janik said, quote, if they prevail in that case and the courts say you have to include Planned Parenthood, then yes, the program goes away, unquote. A recent George Washington University study has warned Texas will be unlikely to adequately provide care to the patients currently served by Planned Parenthood should the ban be upheld. New Jersey's become the latest state to call for a constitutional amendment that would overturn Citizens United, the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision that paved the way for massive corporate spending to influence elections. The state assembly approved the resolution Thursday following a campaign by several activist groups, part of a wave of local efforts that's seen similar measures pass in eight other states. The oil giant TransCanada has temporarily shut down its Keystone pipeline due to apparent safety issues. TransCanada told federal officials Thursday it had halted the massive pipeline, which carries crude oil from the Alberta tar sands to Illinois and Oklahoma. The shutdown will last at least 3 days. The news comes as activists in Texas are nearly a month into a blockade against the construction of Keystone's southern leg. Both President Obama and Mitt Romney appeared together in New York Thursday night for the annual Al Smith Memorial Charity Dinner. Outside the event, a group of protesters, including physicians and medical students, rallied to call for a single-payer health insurance program.
We are here because both President Obama and Governor Romney are threat. What they want to do is a threat to Medicare. Now, with Romney, it's much more of a threat because he wants to do a voucher program, which will really destroy Medicare as we know it. But President Obama also wants to raise the age of eligibility for Medicare, and we think that's not right.
As a medical student, I'm afraid of practicing in the current system. It's going to prevent me from practicing care in the way I want to, which is to help people with their needs and not could be concerned about the endless paperwork of a multi-payer system.
Boston police are being accused of routinely spying on local peace groups at their meetings and protests. The American Civil Liberties Union says police have filed regular reports to Boston's Regional Intelligence Center detailing the activities of groups including Veterans for Peace, United for Justice with Peace, and Code Pink. One event at a church featuring the late historian Howard Zinn was filed under the category of criminal act, groups, extremist. Officers also monitored protesters' out-of-state plans, including attendance at a rally in Washington, D.C. The police have also held on to the surveillance files for several years, despite federal rules that call for them to be expunged if no criminal or terrorist activity is involved. In a statement, the ACLU of Massachusetts said, quote, spying on church groups and peaceful, nonviolent political gatherings violates civil liberties, wastes scarce police resources, and doesn't keep us safe. The U.S. military has imposed a curfew on all U.S. forces in Japan following the arrest of two American troops for allegedly raping a Japanese woman on the island of Okinawa. The top U.S. commander in Japan, Lieutenant General Sam Anguilella, announced the curfew earlier today.
I want to personally apologize for the grief and trauma the victim has endured and the anger it has caused among the people in Okinawa. I am immediately issuing a curfew to all military personnel in Japan, both temporary and assigned. In addition, core value training, retraining for military and SOFA civilians will be conducted by subordinate commanders, and a review of the USFJ Liberty policy will be executed over the coming days and weeks.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you to Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! For those headlines. We are going to take a quick break, but please do stay with us for more international news, as well as everyone's favorite ball game with Iqbal.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no? Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the commercial drive area at
Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at CITR.ca.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM, and now it's time for what, Morgan Yee?
A Hardball with Iqbal.
That's right. Now it's time for everyone's favorite op-ed segment on CITR 101.9 FM, News 101. And as I like to mention before, every one of these beloved segments, this is entirely opinions of me, Iqbal Ahmed, and does not reflect on CITR in any way. Today we will be talking about the QP strike happening on the UBC campus. Well, actually, my take on the strike. As many of our listeners might know, a lot of the QP workers on the University of British Columbia campus have taken strike action. A lot of the, I believe, custodial workers and from food service workers. And on Wednesday, the UBC, the teaching assistants will vote on whether or not to have job action in the very immediate future. And what I want to bring attention to this is not so much of the politics involved in the university versus organized labor, but more the the student reaction to this. I remember back in about pretty much almost exactly a year ago that when Occupy was first growing up, I started Vancouver, I was starting in New York, and then having the Occupy Vancouver, I felt that there was a lot of support for it amongst certain segments of the student body, very vocal support, people who wanted to have an Occupy UBC that got shut down pretty quickly, but there were people actually making a very public statement of their support of the ideals of Occupy Wall Street. And how I interpret Occupy Wall Street was a movement, you know, 1% versus the 99%, and people, the 99%, fighting these the powers that be, the 1%, people who control all the power in the world. website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Iqbal Ahmed.
And I'm Morgan Yee.
And I'm Rohit Joseph.
And this show is also brought to you by Claire Eagle, who's hosting earlier, and produced by our very own CJ.
Woo! Stay tuned for Stranded, coming up next.